whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Today, joining us from NBC Sports, she's the sideline reporter for Sunday Night Football. Been covering the NFL for a long time. Does a fantastic job. She, of course, was on the sidelines when the Commanders clinched, and she'll be there this weekend when the Commanders take on the Bucs in Tampa. It's Melissa Stark, the game, 8 o'clock on NBC and Peacock. Melissa, thanks so much for joining the show. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And it is my understanding, Melissa, that you earlier before talking to me, talked to Terry McLaurin, and I'm sure we'll hear lots more about that conversation on the broadcast Sunday. But anything in particular stand out that you can share with us now as he prepares for his second career playoff game?
Well, I think, you know, he's so excited, first of all, and he's had so much fun this season, and rightfully so. But I think, you know, I was just talking to him about setting the single season franchise record for most receiving touchdowns, and he's so proud of that. I mean, I think he said he didn't think going into the season, if you'd asked him, you know, he sets goals for himself, right? And if he set a bunch of goals about, you know, how many receiving yards, this, that, and the other, and, you know, make it to the playoffs and potentially play in a Super Bowl, all this stuff. But if you asked him, he did not think that was going to be a record that he achieved. So super excited about it. You know, also talked to him about his relationship with Cliff Kingsbury and how much he talks to him during the game and how open Cliff is to his ideas and, okay, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that, and, you know, and how validating that is when, you know, he calls for a certain play and then it works out. So, you know, something to keep. I always try to find things to keep an eye on during the game, you know, some things that we're looking for. So that's definitely something. But I you know, love talking to him just because he's had so many quarterbacks there. And then finally with Jaden, you know, you're seeing what he's capable of. I'm not sure, you know, nationally if he gets the recognition that he has deserved in the past just because of kind of what the organization's gone through and all the quarterbacks that he's gone through. But it's pretty incredible.
I totally agree, and I've been lucky enough to know Terry for a while now since I was back as a beat reporter during his rookie season, and I think it's interesting that he brings up like the relationship, and I'm glad you guys talked about the relationship with Cliff, because I don't know if folks realize how many of the big signature plays that Terry has this year are situations where Cliff has gone to Terry and basically been like, what do you want? Because he knows that, like, that's my guy. And, you know, it goes all the way back to the Cincinnati game winner in Week 3 on Monday Night Football, where he's, like, Terry's like, I want to line up over here. I want to run a go route. And I'm going to score a touchdown. And Terry's good enough to do that. I know you also are working on talking with Mike Evans and some folks about the record that he set that we all saw on Sunday. What's it been like to work on that and talk to some of the folks that you've been talking to about the history that Mike Evans has made?
Yeah, I mean, it's so cool, right? We have these two receivers who are just setting records left and right, and it's just, you know, the respect within the game and the respect for each other. So, yeah, Mike Evans, I mean, I don't know if you saw it or people saw it, there was about like an 8-minute video on YouTube of Mike Evans from once he set the record to kind of walking through all his teammates and then walking back to the locker room and the reception. You could just sort of see the pressure kind of come off of his shoulders and you know, especially going through injury this season, missing a few games and getting that. I think Baker, we had the Bucks a couple weeks ago. I think Baker wanted it more for him than he did for himself, you know, so I talked to Jerry Rice about it yesterday, and friends, you know, they've never talked to each other. They don't know each other, but Jerry's like, you know, when I played with Tim Brown with the Raiders, he's like, I envision that playing with Mike Evans would be similar, just in the work ethic, the way they go about it, the receivers that they are. And Jerry was saying, I would love to play alongside Mike Evans, and just that he has so much respect, and Jerry knows, right? He knows exactly what it takes to go in to get 11 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And, you know, so it was interesting to get Jerry's perspective on it. He tweeted something out, you know, just congratulating him. But I'll talk to Mike tomorrow. I actually fly down there tomorrow. We'll go to practice and then have our production meetings down there tomorrow and talk to Mike. I think they're having – the governor is declaring it Mike Evans Day tomorrow down there, cool. Some sort of special celebration. But just really pretty cool. I asked Jerry how he'd feel if he breaks his record. He's like, I'm all for it, you know. I mean – as we know, the saying goes, records are made to be broken, but just such a good respect level there.
For sure. And Jerry's got so many, he could give up one. He's got like,
exactly.
And he's so far ahead in some of them. It's kind of a joke. Melissa Starks with the sideline reporter for NBC. Of course, Sunday Night Football is where the Commanders will make their return to the playoffs for the first time since they played the Bucs back in the 2020-2021 season. Sunday night, 8 o'clock, NBC and Peacock. And Melissa, you did mention you had the Bucs a couple weeks ago. You also had the Commanders a couple weeks ago when they took on the Falcons. What do you remember, you know, maybe being in the building on Friday when you guys have all those production meetings? And then, you know, as you're thinking about those meetings on Saturday and preparing for the game on Sunday, like, what's the thing that really stood out to you? And then when you're walking out of the stadium Sunday night after they've clinched and Jaden's pulled off what he's pulled off again, like, what's the thing that kind of stuck with you about being around this team when you guys haven't really been around this team because they've been good enough to be on Sunday Night Football most of the last 5 years?
I think the first thing is, you know, we're in the building. We kind of spend the day there. We go to practice. We have our meetings. We go down. We have lunch in the cafeteria, and we're with Dan Quinn, and he's telling us how much he wanted to bring back the history of the organization, right? And that they'd taken down. You spend time in there, like that they'd taken down all the old photos, right, as you're walking around, and just because of the name change and everything. And he's like, I put them all back up. You know, there were so many major accomplishments in the history of this organization. And then to have a guy like Doug Williams, right? I talked to Doug before the game, and I think what struck me from everybody is how much everyone loves Jaden Daniels and his work ethic, from the offense to the defense to the coaches to whoever you talk to. And, you know, Doug Williams saying, I haven't felt this way in so long about this organization, and the energy around the team is off the charts, and everyone's buying in, and you say why, and they say number five, right? And he's like, I call it the Jaden way, like just his work ethic, how he's the first, we've heard, you know, that he changed the locks in college, right, so that he could get in early, and he's the first guy there and all of that. But, you know, he walks the walk and talks the talk. Like, he's got that. He instantly earned the respect of all these guys just because of the way he goes about it. And he doesn't feel like a rookie. He already treated, you know, we've talked about how he treated college, you know, like at the professional level, so that once he comes, it doesn't feel like a rookie season to Jaden Daniels. And we've seen it this season time and time again. In talking to Terry McLaurin earlier today, I said, you know what, you've lived this. You've lived the change in the organization. What's the turnaround, the whole thing? And he's like, I think in the past that we would always find a way to lose, right? I mean, it's so true. Right? You think about it.
For sure.
And now he's like, and now we're finding ways to win. And we've seen it in all these close games. We saw it in our overtime game on Sunday Night Football and the late game heroics, and that no moment is too big. And so I think that really bodes well for the playoffs. I'm so excited about this matchup. You know, you never know who you're going to get. You find out kind of midway through our game, like halftime in our game last week of Sunday Night Football, where you're headed as a broadcast team. I'm so excited.
As someone who's not a night owl, Melissa, I cannot tell you how excited I was when I heard Mike go, and next, we'll tell you the playoff schedule in the middle of the first quarter. I was like, yes! I do not have to stay up till midnight to find this thing out. And I'm sure you were quite excited to, once you guys learned what you get. And the thing is, with the deal that NBC and y'all have with the NFL, you guys get some of the best games every single season, which is fantastic. And you guys do such a great job with them. So happy that that's the case. But you're around the Mahomeses, the Burrows, the Jacksons. Like, you're around the best teams with the best quarterbacks pretty much week in and week out. So. Yeah. Is the conversations that you've had this week and in the couple weeks ago about Jaden, are those very similar to those guys, or is it still different because he's a rookie and those guys have been around for a while?
No, and in fact, I'm happy you asked that, because we do one preseason game a year, and normally we do the Hall of Fame game. We couldn't do it this year because we were all at the Olympics. NBC was covering, you know, early August. So we had the Commanders of the preseason. And we just all walked out of there kind of with our jaws dropped. I mean, from Chris Collinsworth to Mike to me to the producer, the director, everybody, of just how he did not seem like a rookie at all. And just the level of respect already then. And, you know, and we so appreciated that he said, I'm glad I had to earn the job, right? I mean, who says that at that level? And just his mindset and his approach. So I think it's awesome. I think it's so cool when you have these young guys who are the future and the future face of the NFL. And he's obviously such a dynamic, you know, fun quarterback to watch. But like with the poise, and I actually did, you know, one of the things the league has allowed us to do this year, you know, is do the pre-kick interviews right before the game mm-hmm. with a player. And so I did it with Jaden right before, and he was just relaxed and awesome and owned the moment. And Chris Collinsworth afterwards goes, that was my favorite pre-kick interview that we've done all season. And so he's just so likable. And I think it just permeates throughout the building, and you understand that. And, you know, the guys who have been around, the Mahomeses and the Josh Allens and all those guys, are obviously phenomenal recover. But, you know, even like even a Baker Mayfield this week, you know, he's so fun. He's never out of the game. He can always bring you back. And to see the way it's two totally different stories, obviously, but to see the way he's turned around his career and really found a home, you know, and started a family and had a child and all this stuff, and is so grounded and feels so appreciated in Tampa. You know, every quarterback has their story, but it's a really fun one, I think, with both of them.
Last question for Melissa Stark here, of course, Sidelines NBC. She'll be there this weekend as the Commanders take on the Bucks in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. And we talk so much, we spent so much of this interview, Melissa, talking about the composure and just the nature of Jaden Daniels. There's no bigger test of that composure than, all right, buddy, you're in the playoffs. Like the pressure is cranked all the way to 10. And you've covered so many playoff games over your career. I'm curious how you think the playoff experience that is plentiful in Tampa. This is a team that's won their division 4 straight years, and a lot of the same guys are around versus Washington. We're sure you have Ertz, sure you have Wagner. There's a couple other guys that have played in the playoffs, a couple guys that came over from Dallas, but a lot of guys that either haven't been here a while, and a bunch of coaches that, you know, Cliff, Joe Witt, haven't been here in their current position. So how do you think that experience factor plays into the game this weekend when it comes to meeting the moment?
Right. I think a couple things. Number one, I'd start, you know, with Dan Quinn and just the command and the of the organization and the leadership and the respect that he has. And he has been there. He's had some major ups and downs, right, in playoffs, as we, you know, as we well know. But I also would say, you know, in talking to Terry McLaurin earlier today, what he said is a lot of the games that we've had this season, and it's what you and I talked about earlier in our conversation, the close games, the moments where you've had to rise to the occasion and stay even keel, and the fact that no moment is too big. I think that those have really helped this team, right? Because it's like, what's your heart rate? What's your pulse like, right? And we've seen them find ways to win those games as opposed to find ways to lose, as Terry said, that the organization has in the past. So, you know, it's a new slate. I think it all starts anew. And I think, I think the fact that, and as Terry said, like, we're finishers. That's what he's like, I feel like we've got to start faster. That's the key. I mean, it's great to be a finisher, right?
Right.
That really bodes well, because it's, you can start fast, sure, but it's how you finish. So I think that's really cool. And I'm actually glad that he, you know, highlighted that. And we chatted about that, because it, you know, if, for whatever Washington fans are listening, I think it should give you confidence and bodes well for the team in terms of their mentality going in.
For sure. And Dan had a great quote earlier this week. He's like, I love that we can do this, but I try to tell the guys we don't have to. They're 8-4 in close games this year. For whatever it's worth, the Bucks only 3-5 is close games defined by NFL Pro and Next Gen Stats. So if it's close, which playoff games often are, it seems like the advantage will be with Washington, but we'll see on Sunday. Melissa, Mike, Chris will be there. You can watch the game on NBC4 here locally in D.C., of course, on Peacock as well. Melissa, this was so great to chat. Really appreciate it. Safe travels. And look forward to watching you and the crew this weekend.
Thanks so much. Great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
That's Melissa Stark, everybody. Sidelines for NBC Sports with us here on The Hoffman Show. Again, 8 o'clock, their coverage starts. But let's be real. You're just going to flip over after you watch the Packers-Eagles game, which is after you watch the 1 o'clock game, which your TV is just going to be probably on. You're not going to move from your couch after watching the games on Saturday. It's what we're all doing this weekend. It's going to be glorious. When we get back, let's actually dive into that last discussion point that I just had with Melissa on close games and the playoff pressure. Are we nervous at all about all of these players that haven't been there before for the Commanders? We'll talk about it next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I love the question on Around the Horn right now. After losing 17 of the last 24, should Phoenix Suns blow it up? I didn't realize. I knew things were bad. I know Beal had gotten benched. I didn't realize it was that bad.
17 of 24? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, the Wizards. Yeah, so the Wizards are almost that bad.
I know.
Are almost that good in their last 24.
You know who's been really good, quiet as kept, Craig?
Who's that?
The Detroit Pistons. They've won 8 of 9, and I think they've won 5 straight, actually. And they are finally above 500.
Love that
for the first time since 2019.
I was about to say, since when?
Since 2019.
2019? That can't
a long
be
time.
Real. They didn't go like 2-1 to start a season or something?
I guess not.
Holy hell.
Yeah,
the Wizards have been to the playoffs since 2019. Russ?
No.
Didn't they make the play-in?
Yeah, it's been some time.
Okay, maybe not the playoffs. They made the play-in.
Not the I'm talking about the Pistons.
No, I know. Since 2019, the Wizards have made the playoffs. That's how long it's been since the Pistons have been above 500. This is why we talk about football. What do you make of the experience factor? Because I could see where it could matter for Washington, where some guys start to press and try to make plays. I don't think it'll matter at quarterback. I trust Jaden in a big spot to keep it in. I trust that Terry is a big game player. And actually, I think with Terry and Jaden specifically, those are big time players that elevate to big time moments. When the spotlight has been the brightest this year, who has made the key plays for Washington? It is Jaden, and it has often been to Terry. Or even last week against Dallas, Terry goes up and gets the game winner. So I trust that in big moments, those two specifically will rise. I tend to think a guy like Frankie will rise, but I could also see a guy like Frankie or on down the roster, like your Alameda Zacchaeus, your Deami Browns, etc., trying to do a little bit too much and trying to make plays. And sometimes that happens in playoff games. Now, you could say the same thing for Bucky Irving, who's a rookie on the Tampa side of it. Jalen McMillan, who's a rookie on the Tampa side of it. But I do think the fact that the core of Tampa's roster, even guys on their offensive line that are second-year players, like they won a playoff game against Philly last year and played in Detroit and actually played Detroit pretty tough. So I think that is something that hasn't been talked about a ton from the Washington side this week. And why would we? Because it's not an advantage for Washington. But in order to try to paint the whole picture, like it's worth mentioning that the Bucs do have a pretty significant advantage in terms of playoff experience. And I haven't done like the games played thing, but I'm sure if you took off the top two of each roster, the Bucks would lose what? Mike Evans and someone else. The Commanders would lose Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz probably. And like take the next 51 guys, and I don't know that it's even remotely close.
Yeah, I mean, I think they still do have a couple of guys from their Super Bowl, championship
they definitely
team.
Do.
So that does play a factor. But I feel as though the pressing and, the moment getting a little too big would primarily come from somebody that's a rookie quarterback or, I don't know. I just feel like Jaden, he's just so different because we've never seen him, like, fluster. We've never seen the moment be too big for him. And I think that's typically when we would see a guy press, like, at the quarterback position. As far as, like, cornerback goes, Mikey, maybe. But I feel as though he's not even going to be tasked with, defending the Mike Evans. Like, the spotlight isn't necessarily going to be on him.
I mean, we hope not. But, like, eventually there'll be some call where he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, St. Juice, we know if he's out there, and hopefully he's not because Lattimore's playing and it's fine. Like, moments have gotten to him. But there has been times where, like, Mikey this year, I mean, that's a good one. Like, Mikey at times has, like, lost his mind. And you're like, what are you doing, bro? But also, he has made some of the most key plays of the year where he's turned games with super physical play. And I can't stress how important he is this week in terms of the screen game. Because Tampa is the best team in the league on screens. Again, Baker leads the NFL in yardage on passes thrown behind the line of scrimmage. So, Mikey coming up in support. Chin, Quan, obviously, Lattimore, Frankie and Bobby. You know, these D linemen getting out in space. Like, Dorrance Armstrong's been a monster. Like, he'll go slam down a screen for a minus two. Like, these guys have to make these plays this weekend because they're going to set them up, and they're really good at executing them. So it's the mental mistakes everywhere. And then I think the other interesting one to me is the coordinators. And this goes on for everybody but Bowles, who calls the defense for Tampa, if I'm remembering correctly. But, like, Liam Cohen, this is his first year as a play caller. This is his first playoff game. Cliff, I believe they went to the playoffs once when he was in Arizona. It did not go particularly well. Because it was a late season and nothing in Arizona went well for them late in the season. But he has not been in a playoff game in a long time, even if he was one then. So what is his game plan? I have a lot of faith in Cliff because he is ultra creative and ultra competitive every single week. What's he going to do? Throw more trick plays in? Something that's out of the norm? And it also comes down to Dan. Like, Dan's going to be like, hey, play our game. Don't do anything crazy. And so I think for Joe Witt, too, anything that feels like it's a little out of character, I think is going to have more to do with Lattimore being out there than it is, you know, oh my God, it's the playoffs. Let's play a bunch of man coverage and blitz like crazy. It's like, no, that's what they did against Philadelphia because they had Lattimore. And so I don't know that that's going to be any different. Yeah. By the way, I don't think Liam Cohen's going to lose his mind. That dude's awesome. But you don't know. It's the playoffs. That's the fun of it.
Yeah, but that's also the thing I like about Dan. Like, I think he's done a great job of just calming the guys all season long. So I think for guys like Jeremy Chen, Frankie Louvoux, who's, you know, also going to be playing in their first playoff games, I think it's going to be chill just because of the message that Dan Quinn has, you know, spread through that locker room about being calm, being ready for the moment, being where your feet are.
100%. Guys like Allen and Payne. I think that they're interesting to watch this weekend as well. So it's going to be fun to see who shows up, who shows out Sunday night in Tampa. We'll get back to what Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt had to say themselves today ahead of their playoff game coming up in our pick six at six. But next, it is time for Never Read the Comments. We're all over the place on this week. Some really, really fun comments that we'll lock into next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. And, you know, Team 980 is, or at the Team 980 is where you can go to watch the show, not only live, but on demand. And then when you watch it either place, you can leave comments on it. And then we also have plenty of comments that we look at over at the Craig Hoffman YouTube page, where we also just reached 10,000 subscribers, which all becomes relevant information. I'm just telling you this for fun. It's because that all winds up in this segment.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby.
Never read the comments.
All right, let's dive into it. Never read the comments style, except for we do actually read the comments, and we've put a lot of time and effort into this whole YouTube thing, Anthony, to the point that on the at Craig Hoffman YouTube page, just before the new year, we reached 10,000 subscribers. Hey!
I wish I had my
your air horn,
my drop of the applause.
Oh, applause, air horns. Would have taken anything.
Instead, I know. We got.
I did get a tepid applause from Anthony. There we go. An aggressive applause from Anthony. Made a little thank you video. And Anthony, you were thanked in it. Obviously, is a enormous contributor to the show. Some would say the most key outside of, well, me, because we've talked about it. Anthony couldn't host the show. He doesn't want to host the show. He doesn't. No, he's fine in the role that he's in. So I wish people that aren't watching right now could see the grin on your face. Yeah, nope, that is 100% correct.
Yes.
So made a little thank you video, which actually led to some really heartwarming stuff, Anthony. I got this from Dave. Dave in DC 9221 says, "You're on a positive way to your goals. The Commanders making the playoffs and or showing a positive product will really help." I agree. I did thank Jaden Daniels, Adam Peters, and Dan Quinn in the video, Anthony.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know where my bread's buttered. I mean, I'm still objective, but I know what's good for me.
Yeah.
Your insight, even though I do not always agree, is really meaningful, especially when you talk about play evaluation explanation. Why players struggle rather than saying they are no good is refreshing. Best of luck. Thanks, Dave. That comment actually meant a lot. Hey, I don't always agree with you, but I appreciate the way you go about your business. So I appreciate that. Oh, God, I didn't copy and paste the username on this next comment, and it was really touching. So I have to look this up for a second, Anthony. Bear with me, Anthony. Bear with me, audience, for one moment as I try to figure out where this comment came from. And try to do it as efficiently as possible. Something that I'm failing at miserably. If I click on that and then I click on the comments section and I click on that filter, then I can say this comment is from Isaac Montoya. And people, you'll understand, I promise, in a second why I wanted to make sure I gave Isaac credit for this. Isaac Montoya, and he's got a bunch of letters and stuff, but Isaac writes, "Craig, this past semester, I went through EMT school, which was long hours on top of work, and one of the things I most look forward to was listening to your videos on the hour-long drive home. Not only did it keep me sane fighting San Antonio traffic, it was also a robust escape from drowning in so much anatomy and physiology. Thanks for making quality content and putting it on YouTube for Commanders fans like me who don't live in the DMV and can't make the live stream. Please keep it up. They should have put your name somewhere on my EMT certification as credit for helping me get through school." That's cool as hell, Anthony.
That's super cool.
Isaac, salute. Thank you. I think I wrote this back in a comment, but I'm going to say this on here too. Isaac, thank you for dedicating your career, your vocation to serving others. An EMT is obviously such a tremendously important job, and there's a lot of stuff you have to deal with as an EMT. And so salute to you for choosing that as a valiant career path while goofballs like me talk about sports. And it's one of the things that in a moment of sincerity here, you know, there are times when this job feels wholly unfulfilling because there's so much real stuff that's happening in the world. And there are times that I've talked to people who do stuff like Isaac in the real world that I feel like is a much bigger contribution to society than talking about sports. And often they will say, like, I need people like you or the actors that make films or musicians that make music, creators, entertainers, to help me get through my day to do my job. And that makes me feel a little bit better about doing this. And I realize that is on some level self-serving so that I feel better about myself. But I do hope that we're doing this for more than just the paycheck, that there is the connection we have with the audience. And it's very cool when you guys share stories like that. So Isaac, again, salute. I'm sorry you live in a place with terrible traffic. At least you have tremendous tacos and other great Mexican food down there in San Antonio. And the Riverwalk. And you can make fun of Charles Barkley.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Charles Barkley, San Antonio, long history of battle. So in that video, Anthony, last thing on the thank you video, real quick before we dive into the Commanders and Cliff Kingsbury, stay or go, and some of the other things that we talked about this past week and people left comments on. In the video, Anthony, there was some of the footage of you in the rooster sweater and the glasses and the hat, because of course there was. And Steve Moody says, "After the little tease, I want a full video of Anthony lip syncing the Humpty Dance. Yes, I'm old as hell."
I like that song too, though. But I don't know if I can fulfill that promise.
I mean, that would be a pretty funny, because Anthony, the Wheel of Mediocre Punishment was for the regular season.
It was.
And we did say that whoever lost, like, the full season's worth was going to have to do something more severe.
Really?
I do think that that was the case.
Are you making this up?
No, I think that's real. If you sweep the playoffs, I do think there's a chance I could still lose. But what if it was you, that you had, we filmed a music video of you in the Rooster sweater with the fedora and the glasses on, a full Anthony Haney Humpty Dance music video?
One, I would really get into it. Just
you probably would. It actually would be really funny. It actually wouldn't be very much punishment. It would be more punishment for me to edit the thing.
Yeah, that's right. I think I would thoroughly enjoy it. Is that really a punishment at that?
No,
at that point,
it's not. But it is a great idea for content.
Then if you lose,
I had to do it, that would be punishment. I would be mortified. I would just have to get into it so I could survive the thing.
Yeah,
embracement for survival. All right, let's get into some Commanders shenanigans, shall we? And again, thank you everybody for the kind words. Thank you for subscribing. 10K. The goal, by the way, Anthony, for 2025, double it. It's taken us 2 years to get to 10K. I want to get to 20K in 1 year.
Let's
We got to get 28 new subscribers a day on average.
That's good math. Or did you calculate that?
I did that.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say.
I think I did that off the top of the dome right now. Get the hell out of here. Do you know me? Come on. All right. Two enormous topics for the week. One, talking about Jaden Daniels and the decision to remove him from the Dallas game is how I'm going to say that. Not bench him. Remove him from the Dallas game. But first, on Cliff Kingsbury and whether or not he would stay or go when he gets job offers, which inevitably he'll at least get interview requests. He's already got a couple for the head coach openings around the NFL. Brian Mulholland, or actually, first, let's, before Brian had a big long comment that I want to read. But you had people both ways saying, for instance, Sci-Kai Buddy 4603, Cliff is staying one more year at least. Leaving Washington, a 12-win team, would be taking five steps back to get a bad ball club off the ground, go and try to win a Super Bowl, and then go coach, as in head coach. Then you have people like Butler32X, who says he better take any job that he can. I am of the thought that none of the current jobs available are actually that appealing. I will say the Raiders firing Tom Telesco today as their general manager to match Antonio Pierce getting fired yesterday makes the Vegas job jump up my rankings, because it is the only non-Jets job that has a GM opening as well as a coach opening. So if you are, for instance, trying to move to the front of the Ben Johnson coach hierarchy of where he might want to finally leave if he leaves Detroit, he probably wants to take Commander's assistant GM Lance Newmark with him to be the general manager. That's been rumored around the league, but let's say it's not Newmark, it's someone else, whoever that person is. And if you're a coach somewhere else, maybe you want to take someone with you that's a general manager to make sure that you're on the same page. Vegas is the only place that has that. And you have an owner with resources and that will spend. And, you know, they talked to Cliff about the OC job last year. I don't know that Cliff is going to want to go back to Vegas on that front, but who knows? We'll see. Brian Mulholland, 2467, says, though, here's the problem with being picky about your head coach opportunities. The quote-unquote good jobs, however you define them, don't open up very often. People like Andy Reid and John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin tend to sit on them for a decade plus. And the lesson of Bobby Slowick shows how quickly you can go from having the cachet to pick your destination to having no one return your phone calls overnight. I would also be skeptical of the opportunities that are out there right now, but how do you know the next years won't be worse? I hope Cliff stays. He really won me over after being a Cliff skeptic when he was hired. But if your objective is to be a successful head coach, I feel you have to go out and interview, and you have to do so seriously with the intention of taking the job if it's quote-unquote good enough. Maybe none are good enough, but that's a dangerous game. I think this is a fine take from Brian, Anthony. I think in order to get a job, you first got to realize, like, okay, what's the job? And to find that out, you have to interview. But I also think part of it is, I don't need to interview with the Jets. There's nothing Woody Johnson can tell me that would make me not believe all the things that I know to be true about Woody Johnson. It's like when Ron Rivera took the Commander's job and Dan Snyder was the owner. And he's like, oh, I can, you know, Dan's giving me all this power. I'll be able to run the ship. No, you're still working for Dan Snyder, the same buffoon who's been running the team for 25 years straight into the ground. And guess what? He continued to run it into the ground, and now Ron Rivera likes to run around being like, if Dan hadn't been the owner, and it's like, you took the job. And I think that one of the biggest factors for a head coach's success is you have to be great at hiring other people. And in some ways, that includes hiring your boss, quote unquote. You have to understand who you're working for and if you can work for them. And I could see going to Vegas, talking to Mark Davis and being like, I can work with this guy. Now, I'd have a lot of questions about how many coaches he's fired after 1 year and some of the upheaval in that organization. But I could see that being the case. After listening to Shad Khan talk in Jacksonville, I wouldn't want to work for that guy. I don't think he understands how the league works. And so it really comes down to, do you want to get paid or do you want to be successful? And again, do you have to? Yes, the Pittsburghs, they don't come open very often. They've had three coaches since the 1960s. Baltimore, don't come open very often. Harbaugh's been there for, I think it's 17 years. But I do think you have to look at certain jobs that may not be as appealing on paper because the roster, for instance, is bad and go, that's temporary. We can change that. What you can't change is ownership and how the structure is within an organization. And if you are Cliff Kingsbury and you have an idea of that you want to lay down the structure of the organization your way, you either need to find somewhere where it's actually laid down your way already and the people there you can work with, or you have to find somewhere that's willing to give you a blank canvas and a long runway to actually build. And I don't know that any of the jobs on this market are going to do that. And if that means you're here for two or three more years, fine. He's getting paid head coach money until 2027 from Arizona. So I don't see the appeal of going and failing again, because that's the last thing I'll say, Anthony, about Cliff, is he's not a first-time guy. He's not someone that if he fails, people are going to be like, oh, he got bad ownership in Arizona and bad ownership in New York. They're going to be like, he's a two-time failed head coach. We're not hiring him again. This is his last shot.
Yeah, I mean, so, and I think you've, you know, stressed this the last couple of days. Like, money isn't an incentive for Cliff right now when it comes to the head coach openings. Like, it's not. It's more so, from what I'm gathering anymore, ownership, the roster, and I'm not even sure like which one or like which
I would hierarchy. Think ownership is more important.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, working with Caleb is appealing. Working with Trevor Lawrence to an extent is appealing. Working with Drake May is appealing. It's certainly more appealing than, oh man, I got Derek Carr and Spencer Rattler. Like, if you go to New Orleans, you better know, like, it's probably going to be a couple years. But like, look at how fast they flipped the roster. And if I'm Cliff, like, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, man, I know that so much of the success is driven by five, and they had the number two pick in the draft, and they got it right, and they saw how fast it could flip. But I'm also like, hey, not many people here that were here last year. And a roster, too. This is something I was listening to the Athletic Football Show, which I feel like I listen to all the time and then wind up talking about on the show. But like Mike Sando was on. I think Mike's really smart. But Mike talked about like, some of the coaches like looking at the rosters and he's like, you better build an O-line. And I'm like, that is, I don't want to say it's overrated, but I think we learned the lesson this year in Washington that who you are as a coordinator can change who your offensive line is. Yeah, the trenches are super important. Coaching them well can turn a mediocre roster into something you can win with. Of course, it's better that you would over time try to build something like Detroit and Philadelphia have, where they have the best offensive lines in football. But those lines are also coached well. I guarantee you, Eric Bieniemy could turn Detroit's offensive line into not as good of an offensive line as Ben Johnson has had it operating at the past couple of years. Like, it's mostly the same dudes here. Well, I guess not mostly the same dudes, but like mostly the same level dudes here. Like, I don't think people are looking at Nick Allegretti and like, wow, what an upgrade they got at left guard this year in Washington. People thought this was going to be the worst line in the league. They underrated how good Biotish was. But Andrew Wiley's still at right tackle. They have a rookie starting at left tackle. And they're way better because the way Cliff deploys them is intelligent. And the quarterback also elevates the offensive line. And so when you look at these rosters, I think, one, if you're someone like Cliff, who is a scheme guy, who is a schematics guy, you go, I can work with that in a way that the last coach couldn't. And two, you know how fast you can flip a roster. You want 30 new guys? And maybe not New Orleans because they're in cap hell. So it might be a two-year project there. But do you have good ownership? Do you have, if there's a GM in place, can you work with him? Because like Mickey Loomis, for instance, in New Orleans is an executive type. He's not actually a super scout. So if you want to bring in an assistant GM with you that he's willing to work with, and like that guy's kind of running your football department, that could be an appealing spot. You're just going to have to deal with a really crummy roster and a bad cap situation for 2 years. But I'd rather deal with that than knowing that my owner is going to meddle in everything we do, like the Jets, any day of the week. Any day of the week. Because also, the good ownership in a place like New Orleans will give you a longer runway. So if you're trying to find a place that's both, yeah, you're probably going to have to try to see if John Harbaugh wants to retire. But I do think that the ownership thing is the one that, like, that's just an absolute no-go for me. The other big topic of the week in the comments, Anthony, was about, obviously, we talked a lot about on Monday about how Jaden Daniels getting taken out of the Cowboys game was, I think, a fine move, but one that did not make a whole lot of sense as explained. I thought Michael Phillips put it absolutely perfectly when he joined us very briefly on Monday, when he was like, we know that you're not going to bench your quarterback for performance like you said you were doing here, because you didn't when his rib was hurting for 3 straight weeks. Like, we all saw that. What are you talking about? And so I thought the couple comments that were really good on that front. Double Raven, double zero. So it spelled out double Raven and then 00, Anthony. But in my mind, that's double Raven, double zero.
So is the word double or is it Raven, Raven?
No, it's the word double, the word Raven, and then 2 zeros.
Okay.
But I think you say that out loud, double Raven, double zero.
Okay.
Yeah. Says, Quinn simply does not want to imply or admit that he was willing to lose the game to protect his quarterback. He doesn't want to hear that accusation. I think that's probably correct. I also think that's very silly, because that's a perfectly fine thing to say in Week 18 when you've already clinched a playoff spot, which was my whole point. CE Jink 140. That's probably not how that's supposed to be pronounced. I like double Raven, double zero better. All due respect to Segink 140. Who knows, but I took it as, we are going to do what's best for the team. And it was a physical game. Five was getting sacked, banged up. Five probably did have some soreness. And if they needed to win to make the playoffs, he probably would have stayed in. But it was more important to make sure he didn't get overly banged up or injured when their playoff spot was already locked. And further, Dallas was successfully mixing up the defense, resulting in Five not having the best game. So don't let this game damage his confidence or his body, and see if Marcus can provide a spark. Just my 2 cents. Again, I don't really have a problem with that calculation. That's just not what Dan said, except for the spark part. He's like, if it was week 12 in the middle of the season, I would have made the same decision. And again, I have no problem with the decision, because it would be silly not to factor in where you already are in the season and kind of the status of your quarterback and the way the game is going. There was something that was a little bit off. And if that was being caused by leg soreness, fine. And if that's enough that Dan would have actually benched him in week 12, fine. I just find that hard to believe, because you want to let your quarterback, especially a young quarterback who you want to learn these lessons over time, you want to give him time to work through stuff. Also, Jaden said flat out in the postgame that had this not been week 18, they would have had to drag him off the field. So I don't believe that for a second. Which, again, none of my issue was that it was the wrong move. It was just, don't lie to me. What's the saying, Anthony? Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Yep.
Felt like my leg was getting peed on a little bit.
Yeah.
I did love this comment from James. James Hill 2518 says, DQ removing JD was perfect move. Jaden is a humble student of the game. Trust and believe he learned from Mariota. I believe it will be a positive energy moving forward. I do love the point of, like, given that it was week 18, Jaden was like, hell yeah, let's let Marcus get some snaps. And he was the happiest person on the field when they went out and did what they did. Jaden's humility here, and knowing that Jaden wouldn't be a problem with this in the press, no leaking to reporters of this or whatever, like, that speaks very well of Jaden, and it's part of what makes Jaden special. All right, last couple fun ones to end here, and then you'll hear from Cliff and you'll hear from Joe Witt Jr. coming up in the pick six at 6. On the Benjamin St. Juice of it all, Gary Myers 7467 says, I've been saying he is bad from day one and he has lost a lot of games for us. Anthony, who's been the starting cornerback for most of December?
Corner?
For the Commanders? Yeah, corner.
We've had Mikey.
Yep. And who was on the other one?
I mean, BSJ and
Davis started once. Yeah. Lattimore had the game. I think Philly was like the first week.
Game and a half.
Yeah.
Or but, Lattimore.
How many games did they lose in December?
They didn't lose any.
Yeah. How many games did they win all year?
12.
How many games of those did BSJ start? Like 9 of them, probably?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. You can't, again, you don't have to overstate stuff to make your point. Yes, he has been bad a lot this year. There are certainly a lot of plays you can point to and be like, that's not good. He has lost us a lot of games. No, he hasn't, because they haven't lost a lot of games. Last but not least, during the postgame show, Anthony, called Marcus Mariota old because I said he had old man strength. And people were really upset about that. Although some were more jovial about it, including Oathmane, I don't know how to say this. You know who you are. Calling Mariota old is crazy. He's only 31. Look, I'm 34.
Ah.
In about 6 weeks, I'll turn 35.
Ah.
I'm a young man. Stop laughing, you jerk. I'm a young man, but 31 in the NFL is old. It's NFL old. He's a young man in real life, but he's NFL old. That's all I meant. I say that with respect. He's got the beautiful salt and pepper going. But he did old man shrink a dude. And there's nothing wrong with that. All right. That's never read the comments, everybody. You can leave your comments on YouTube at Craig Hoffman, at the Team 980. We read them. We pick out their favorite ones to respond to. Some are fun. Some are nonsensical. Some are interesting. If your comments are any of those things, maybe you'll hear them on this segment. And that'll be next Wednesday at 5:30, because that's when we do this live here on the radio. When we get back here on the Team 980, live on the radio, pick six at 6, Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. You're here from both coordinators ahead of the weekend's wild card showdown against Tampa. Next.